Wie schön, dass du hier heute wieder am Start bist bei den Mindful Sessions, bei deinem Podcast für mehr Achtsamkeit und Soul Power. Und ich freue mich ganz besonders über die heutige Podcast-Folge, die ich gemeinsam mit meinem Mann Michael Kurskurt und unserem Besuch Lama Rod Owens aufgenommen habe. Lama Rod Owens ist buddhistischer Lehrer und Aktivist. Und gemeinsam sprechen wir darüber, wie wir durch die herausfordernden Zeiten, die sich uns allen aufgrund der aktuellen Weltgeschehnisse gerade offenbaren, navigieren können. Wie können wir durch die Apokalypse gehen und gleichzeitig Glück und Liebe erfahren und Glück und Liebe verbreiten? Genau darum geht es in diesem englischsprachigen Gespräch, mit dem ich dir ganz viel Freude wünsche.
We would love to welcome you to both of the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad to be here.
So, me and my podcast, I always start with the most important question of them all. How are you?
The heaviest question of them all. Yeah, you know, I am okay. I'm okay, which is wonderful. I feel, right now in this moment, really balanced. I feel like I'm not overwhelmed by the sadness or the despair or the fear. Right now, I feel very connected to gratitude, to some joy. Right. And it's all kind of balancing out, you know, even to a point where I'm just really just happy to just to be in the world at this moment, which I know a lot of people aren't. Right. Obviously. But like, I just feel like I made a choice to be here and I feel good about that choice.
Mm. It's quite a profound thing to say. I made a choice to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think every day it's like, I think we undervalue the work of choosing to be present and to be in the places that we are. Like that's a conscious choice. Like every day I wake up and say, I choose to be here. Like I want to be here. Right. Not because it's fun, you know, and it's not a party. It's not a parade. Right. You know, it's not all my favorite things, but it is like I'm doing something that I think is really helpful. Hmm. And that's the biggest value of my life is to be helpful. Right. And so as long as I'm helping, I just feel really connected and I just feel like I belong here.
What do you feel is helpful for you, for yourself?
Yeah. For me, you know, it's really about telling the truth about what I need, about who I am. It's about being my most authentic self, right? It's about opening, expanding, taking up space. It's about doing hard work, but also doing this other work, which is having fun.
Mm-hmm. You know? Thank you for that.
Like yeah. It is, yeah. I mean, I just think if you work hard, you play hard, mm-hmm. right? And I think we're missing the play. Mm. It gets really dense right now with everything that's happening in the world. And for me, play is how I disrupt the density and get like a little lighter, you know? And that's how I not only survive, but that's how I thrive. Mm-hmm. Right. The joy, the play, the gratitude. Yeah. Because I'm always going to be doing the work.
And that's like the meaning of I chose to be here, yeah. right? Because mm-hmm. especially like in the self-help world, yeah. this is mm-hmm. something I can be happy when I achieved something, right. which is also a form of escaping yeah. again. But mm-hmm. I chose to be here. Here, mm-hmm. like with everything I am bringing to the table, yeah. maybe if I feel some anxiety yeah. or even mm-hmm. some joy or whatever mm-hmm. I feel, mm-hmm. I chose to yeah. be here. Yeah. I, with everything I have. And there are so many moments we don't allow ourselves to be, even when we are alone with ourselves, and especially when we are in spaces or places with other people, we deny ourselves and aspects from ourselves which we feel are not welcome, which are not good. We talked about that before, being the good girl, you know, and to invite ourselves to the now.
Yeah. Yeah, to offer ourselves from permission to expand into the moment, which means that, yes, I have to open up to the things that I'm still struggling with. I'm still opening to the pain, right? To the despair, to the hopelessness, right? Yes, I choose to be here, but these things are still very present for me as well.
How do you do that? Mm-hmm. How do you open yourself to pain, because actually we trained ourselves to not open ourselves to pain.
Yeah.
How do you access your pain?
Yeah. Well, I first of all, very first, I say I am experiencing pain. I'm experiencing pain and suffering like every other being in this world. I'm not special because I'm experiencing this. I'm not being punished. I didn't do anything wrong necessarily, but this is a part of what it means to be human, right? To be embodied, to be in this reality. There will be suffering, right? There's suffering because this reality isn't truly what I am. Like, this is an experience that I'm moving through in order to remember what I really am, right? And it's not like I don't complain, because I do. Like, I think it can feel really like, I think people listen to this and say, oh, you know, that means that every day is cheerful and I'm just grateful for everything. I'm just in awe. You know, no, that's not the case either. Like, I allow myself to complain, right? Like, complaining is just, it helps me to recognize that, yeah, there is suffering, right? Yeah, yeah, this is hard. Yeah, yeah, and there are things I would rather be doing, right? Or things that would feel better, right? But I know that, like, that isn't important for me right now. It's important for me to choose to be in relationship with my discomfort in order to help others to be in relationship with their discomfort. It's the discomfort overall for me that's teaching me how to get free from all of the suffering. Like, I can't understand freedom until I start paying attention to and taking care of the suffering itself. Not bypassing it, not pushing it to the side, or just like decorating it, you know, or creating like competing parallel storylines to get lost in. No, the suffering is where the liberation is for me, right? And it brings me into the truth. And the truth is what actually begins to help me to remember that, oh, I'm actually not the suffering. Suffering is just an experience. Pain is just an experience. It's not inherently who and what I am. And that's what frees me from, like, pain, or rather, it frees me from the rigidity and the overwhelming kind of experience of pain and suffering.
So from the narrative we also fabricate around suffering, around pain, the identity we build around that.
Yeah, yeah, because part of that identity is also how we self-identify with the pain. When we say things like, I am angry, I am hopeless, I am sad, that's just saying that I am inherently the suffering or the stensity, and it's hard to experience something different, right? When you're saying, I am something, right? Then how can you be other than that if you are, right? So this is why saying this is an experience, right? It begins the process of, I think, reconnecting to the experience of space itself and fluidity. So all this pain, this suffering arises from me, but now I have practiced enough to also be in relationship and connected to the space that holds everything. And I started connecting with space because I started saying, okay, this is, everything is just an experience, right? Yes, this is moving through my mind, this is moving through my body, but like, this is not inherently who and what I am, right?
And I'd like to somehow, I think there's such a important and but also so difficult to grasp point, maybe this whole point around being engaged with my pain, being engaged with my suffering, being engaged with what other people project onto me, what the world brings to me that I have to deal with, facing that, acknowledging that, that in itself is, that's quite something already, right? But then I think then there's a point where it doesn't get so obvious, because how do I then engage with that in a way that truly frees me, instead of engaging with this feeling of pain, suffering, strife, and so on, in a way that I feel like I am acting, I feel like I am doing something, but maybe what I'm doing is I'm hardening this identification. Maybe what I'm doing is I'm perpetuating a certain pattern, but I might not be aware that I'm doing that because I'm thinking, well, I am engaging with my pain, I am doing something. So this, I think this point is, it would be wonderful if you could speak to this crucial point, maybe, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think engaging is the word, right, that you have to get clearer about. Like, when I talk about engaging with the pain or being in a relationship with the pain, what I'm talking about is experiencing. You know, like, I'm not reacting to it, I'm not naming it and then doing something different. You know, like, I'm actually, when I talk about experiencing, I'm talking about this intimacy. I am actually trying to feel this pain. I'm trying to understand how pain arises for me in its various forms, as energy, as physical sensation. It's all energy, right? But how the body experiences pain, how my mind is experiencing pain, right? Then on top of that, the ways that I'm pushing pain away, which becomes suffering, right? Because for me, pain and suffering are two different experiences. The pain is the root experience of like discomfort, right? Suffering is all the ways I'm pushing that pain away that creates another layer of discomfort, right? So a lot of us aren't even in relationship to the pain. We're actually kind of like wrapped up in the suffering and the pushing away, the tension, the frustration, right? The secondary experiences, right? So a lot of us have to cut through the suffering to start actually experiencing the pain, the sensation itself, be it mental or physical. And when we start experiencing the pain, that's when the pain begins to show us something different. Right? It's like, we're so afraid of getting there, then we get there. And then you're like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was, right? I often like to think about clouds, you know, and fog. Like, I'm just fascinated by that, because this is a great way to talk about pain. So like fog, like if you walk through fog, right, you see that fog is just droplets of water suspended in the air, right? And this is also related to when I first started flying, you know, in airplanes, which was when I was like 13, was my first flight. And you just ascend up into the cloud layer in a plane. And when I was very young, I grew up watching the Care Bears.
You know, sliding on the rainbows.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's a very 80s, like very Gen X, you know.
But in German, it's Glücksbärchis,
yeah,
right?
Glücksbärchis.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
You know, and for anyone who doesn't know that, listening, the Care Bears is a cartoon. You can find the cartoon on YouTube. And it's about these bears, like teddy bears, living teddy bears who live in the clouds. Right. And when I was little, I said, oh, I want to live in the clouds as well. In a way, I did. I was living in the clouds because I had a very active imagination. But And so when I thought, oh, anyone can live in the clouds when I was little, until, you know, I got into a plane and you go up into the clouds and it's the same thing. It's just like water, droplets of water suspended in the air, bunched together to create this illusion, you know, of density, right? And so this is really related to pain, because from far away, it looks like our pain is really dense and heavy. But when you come close, when we're actually getting curious about how pain feels, it draws us into a deeper experience with pain. And then we begin to see that pain is just all these tiny experiences kind of bunched together that look really dense, but have a lot of spaciousness in them. But you'll never understand that if you're always pushing the pain away. And so when I started doing that in my practice, getting close to the pain, everything started to change. I was like, oh, this pain isn't just one huge overwhelming experience. It's all these different experiences. And I can just deal with one experience at a time, you know? Mm. They're like threads too that are just being woven together. I can just pick out one thread at a time to experience and to release, to heal from. And I just keep going, right? Until you're just in the pain. And as you're in the pain, you're also in the space.
Yeah.
You know, around all these experiences that make up the pain itself, right? Mm-hmm. And I just love that, you know? And I live there now, right? Which is like scary for people. Like, I live in the pain and...
The Care Bear dream.
I am a Kino, you know? But like, yeah, there are rainbows too, like in this pain, right? There's like joy, there's gratitude. You know, and the more I have dwelled in my pain and opened up to it and metabolized it and healed it, the more I also feel close to people.
See, that is another point that I right away, I would like to pinpoint that one.
Yeah.
Because one could be forgiven for thinking, oh, if the pain then sort of turns into these droplets, it evaporates, I sit in the pain, I space. I am in space, right? I am space. Well, I would lose the connection to other people suffering because I would look at them and like, ah, that's not real, so I don't care, right? So the experience of, okay, this is not real, or this is real, but at the same time, it's not what I thought it was. How does that lead to more connection and not to less connection?
Yeah. Because I think that helps us to understand what people's fears really are. And so I have a deeper insight into what people are running away from, right? And I get that now. Like, I understand fear. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not this like ambiguous, evil thing.
And because of not trying to escape.
Yeah.
From fear, but to say it's a part of existence.
Yeah, it's part of being, right? And I just feel like I don't judge people like I used to because I know how hard this is. Mm. Like there's much more grace for people now. Like, it doesn't mean that like I just give people an excuse to do whatever they want, you know, and they're bypassing, but I get it.
Great point though.
Yeah, right. Right, it's not an excuse.
It doesn't mean everything goes. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean not holding people accountable.
Exactly.
But to know or to understand, even though maybe we don't have the same story and we have very different lives, this part of being human and having a lot of fear in me, fear of not belonging, fear of whatever, being judged, being shamed, being...
Yeah. And that we're all dealing with this every second of the day, right?
And we are all kind of trying to escape it or learned we have to try to escape it.
Yeah.
And fabricating narratives and building escape routes.
Yep. Yeah. And how these like narratives create systems and institutions and cultures, right? That you begin to see the roots.
And hate.
And hate.
And
hate,
judgment. A lot of judgment.
Shame. Mm-hmm. All of that is rooted in fear. Like so much of the violence that we experience is rooted in fear, right? Because we actually don't know who we are because we can't get close enough to the pain to like actually relate to the space within the pain that's actually trying to reflect back to us our own liberated natures, our own spacious natures, right? So you just push all this to the side, right? And all of this has really influenced me to understand how to help people in a different way. Like it's more than just sitting around telling people what to do. You know, if you want to be less afraid, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Instead, it's like I have to become what freedom looks like, right? I have to learn how to be liberated in my own experience so people can see what that's like and then feel inspired, right? You know, I think that like, you know, we've had so many great, amazing spiritual leaders, spiritual figures throughout history that many of us have been deeply impacted by. But I think sometimes we feel like what these people did, like Jesus, for instance, or the Buddha, you know, what these people did seems really impossible, right? But I think the point, in my case, of being like a spiritual teacher or a spiritual leader is to embody what this looks like as directly as possible, right? It's not about like all the spiritual stuff. It's actually about choosing to be in this moment, choosing to experience what's arising for me, and choosing not to self-identify with it. And that offers me the space, really, to choose love and care, not just for myself, but for everyone.
To be present with what's arising, but at the same time, not to self-identify with
it. And not to be distracted by what's arising. Like my pain and trauma and everything wrapped up in it is not the only thing that's happening in this moment. So I'm not trapped by that. And I see so many people moving through the world trapped, like consumed by these experiences of suffering that they can't connect to anything else, let alone anyone else. You know, they can't connect to the spaciousness, the freedom of the phenomenal world.
You know, for some people that, let me talk about myself, right? There are moments where I might be so consumed with a certain pain or a certain aggression towards an injustice or whatever, that it might feel like a betrayal to allow myself to also experience a spaciousness or a joyousness. And this is it's like a deep-rooted feeling of, if I let this go, I will be betraying the cause or other people. I will be betraying the injustice. What's going on? What's up with that? What's going on there?
Well, you know, basically, I don't think people who are struggling to survive need me to show up miserable. Like, because I just become a burden for them. They're trying to get liberated, and then all of a sudden I'm there and they have to liberate me from my misery, right? I just don't think that like self-identification with suffering is how we create solidarity. Love, care is how we create solidarity, compassion. Like I see people trying to get free from suffering, and I can get with that because that's what I'm trying to do. And let's do this together. Right? But when I show up, I need to show up with spaciousness, fluidity, openness, right? Not with the density of being self-identified with the trauma and the pain. Mm-hmm. Like people who are struggling to survive need us to support them in lifting from the density of everything that comes with surviving and struggling to be well and so forth. Right? And I have to choose joy in the same way my ancestors had to choose joy, right? I choose joy as this experience that helps me to stay in tune with space. And space helps me to experience clarity. Like I can choose ways of getting free if the space is there, right? I can choose different ways of being for myself and help others to choose different ways of being, right? The density, right, is what we're trying to lift, right? Not spiral deeper into, you know? So when I am choosing joy, like one of my personal practices is like when I feel joy or space or gratitude, I imagine just sharing that with all beings, especially beings who don't have that capacity right now, people who are struggling to survive war and genocide and everything. I want them to have this energetic experience so that can be a resource for them to survive, right?
I love this answer because yeah. I think, as Mike said, it's like we live in a world where we see so much injustice, mm-hmm. and it's easily happening that people feel guilty. Mm-hmm. How can I feel mm-hmm. like happy now?
Yeah.
Or also mm-hmm. we see so much injustice in so many levels. It's multi-leveled.
Yeah.
So we easily think I have to stand with this group now, mm-hmm. and everyone who's not standing there mm-hmm. is wrong. And yeah. I don't want to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I totally get that. Mm-hmm. But we are living in a world where there are so many situations of injustice
yeah.
and wrong. Then mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. so. I don't know, maybe I'm losing myself now, but yeah. I think you get what I want to say. And yeah. it's like you have to, in order to give something and to engage,
yeah.
you have to also have an opinion. Yeah. And it's, I think it's easy for people, they think, if I follow the practice mm-hmm. Of compassion, mm-hmm. then I don't have an opinion, and then I but it's actually the opposite.
Yes. Yeah, you will have an opinion. You'll uh-huh. be very vocal, right? Yeah. when you're like actually practicing care mm-hmm. and compassion, that makes you even more concerned mm-hmm. about people and the world and the earth and everything, right? And I think something that's really important here is that, like, I have to understand that, like, the violence that I see in the world is also rooted in my experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I am the world.
Exactly. And, let's talk about this term good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about mm-hmm. that before.
Yeah.
I'm part of it.
Yeah.
I'm not good,
yeah.
only good.
Yeah.
That's just not me.
Yeah.
And I'm part of the problem. I'm mm-hmm. part of the injustice.
Yeah.
I'm part of the world. And I think we try to escape from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we were young, we try to be part of the world.
Yeah.
We try to stay part of the world. Mm-hmm. We learned very quickly, what do I have to do to be part of the world and to stay part of the world and mm-hmm. to belong?
Mm-hmm.
And we learned certain strategies to mm-hmm. be the good person,
yeah.
to stay part of the world. And
mm-hmm.
Like a few years ago, I think we... Yeah, like also in this whole self-help bubble, and that's mm-hmm. a good thing. We mm-hmm. try to lose the strategies, you mm-hmm. know, because we were like we realized, hey, that's not good for us. It's mm-hmm. not good for me to only live on the strategies and to only be the good one and to stay part of the world. So there's like, I think that's the entrance for a lot of people, the entrance mm-hmm. door to the work with themselves, inner work, mm-hmm. and so inner child work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then now to look at the world and to not trying to fabricate and to continue mm-hmm. this narrative from, mm-hmm. hey, I want to be on the right side.
Yeah.
I want to be the good one. Yeah. I'm doing, I'm the good one. Yeah. And actually, it's the expansion mm-hmm. of this narrative mm-hmm. that we tried to lose,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. and to accept, yeah, we are not the good one mm-hmm. always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because...
And that's painful. That's fucking scary.
Yeah. Yeah, because like we use this idea of being good, or rather, this idea of being good is weaponized against us.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, to like keep us in line, mm-hmm. right? To keep us silent, right? But my understanding of goodness is also telling the truth about when I'm not good, when I'm not practicing goodness, when I'm actually doing something that creates harm, or participating in something, or a system or what have you that like is creating harm. Like that's happening for all of us at the same time. I'm both victim and perpetrator, you know? And this is why this practice is on one hand, very personal. Like if I want to see the world change, I have to change, right? Because again, I am a part of the world, right? And I have to change how I just kind of go along with the workings of the world, which is really uncomfortable, right? But again, it's beginning to tell the truth of how I am also at the same time creating harm as I experience harm, right? And then there's lots of things that gets risked, you know? A lot of stuff is at stake now because I open myself to be blamed for certain things. Mm. I can become part of the problem. Mm. Right? But there's no other way to get free from these cycles of violence and these systems that we create until we learn how to hold the discomfort, you know, of not practicing goodness. Right? And this is why I say, you know, in my work, I say that like, yeah, I'm trying to choose the reduction of harm and violence each second. Mm. Right? So I'm not a traditionally a good person, right? But I'm trying to do what's good in the moment. And I don't always make it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I choose pettiness, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do say things on purpose to hurt people because I'm not actually taking care and holding space of my own anger mm-hmm. and the pain beneath my own anger. Sometimes I just want to retaliate. Right? But that happens less and less now, right? I don't think we can ever get to a place where we're just 100% nonviolent and non-harmful. Mm. But my goal is to reduce that as much as possible, right? And another thing here is, of course, our deep attachment to perfection. Mm. And we say, well, all or nothing. You know?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, instead of saying, well, this is all a process that I'm slowly working through, yeah. right? Because that's hard. You know, that means if you're in process, that means you're going to be in this process for a bit. And we just want to get there. We yeah. want something really simple and easy, you know, a magic pill.
The quick fix.
The quick fix. And that kind of, you know, that promise of a quick fix is what drives like the self-help wellness industry, you know, like everyone's always publishing their three steps to get free, you know, and it just doesn't work like that. You know, people want a simple plan, but how we got here wasn't simple. So you need like this isn't simple. This is really complex. So we need structures and practices and lineages that acknowledge the complexity of where we're at. And we already have them. Like, we don't have to create more stuff. Like, everything is here. It's been here for a very long time. But we have to return back to this wisdom instead of always trying to choose what's easy, you know?
Your book is called The New Saints.
Yeah.
Right? It's a super interesting title if you try to put it in German.
Right.
I asked you before if you already had a German publisher, if you had a German translation. And one part of that question was, I was like, oh, how did they translate that? Because the German word for saint, heilige, is, how to put this easily, So what it literally, if I would translate it back into English, it could also mean a holy person. So it carries the, it carries mainly the connotation of holiness, right? Now, in German, as in English, holy and whole are related, because in German, the German word Heilung, to get well, is also in there. To get well is related to holiness, and that is related to becoming one.
Yeah.
So all of that is together in the German language there, but on the surface, it carries the weight of holiness. And holiness in German has impeccableness. You are unstained. You are perfect. You are faultless. So, so I would love to hear from you about what saints for you means, and if that, like, if it carries different connotations than this pure holy person in German. That word it has impeccable purity.
Yeah.
So it could be something very alien, you know, like unachievable.
Well, perfection is unachievable. There's no such thing as perfection, right? There's no such thing as perfection in a reality of impermanence where things are always shifting, you know? So when I think about sainthood, you know, like traditional holy sainthood, the saints themselves weren't perfect, right? If we look at traditional theology, right, and we look at Christianity, Jesus wasn't perfect either, but somehow perfection arose, you know, after the passing of Jesus, which became unattainable, which I think is a really, you know, convenient excuse not to not to try so hard sometimes, you know.
Yeah, man.
I can't be perfect, so, like, you know. But when you return, you know, a saint like Jesus back to humanity, right, then you realize what the work really is, you know, and what that kind of practice and transformation really entails. And then people are like, well, that's too uncomfortable. So let's just push the saints and Jesus to this pedestal.
This unattainable thing.
Yeah, and just kind of get lost in the worship. You know, but the worship, you know, but we're trying to become Christ if we're talking about theology, right?
Well, and the Buddha.
Yeah, the Buddha, you know, and the Buddha was like, don't become like me, become yourself, become what you really are. Like, the Buddha's nature and our nature is the same nature, right? Which is what drew me to Dharma. It's like, no, this isn't about being perfect, it's about remembering what you are. It's hard to be perfect in the situation of the relative, right? Because this isn't a place of perfection.
Yeah, and perfect is, by definition, a fixed state that doesn't change. And show me one anywhere.
Yeah, this is all impermanent. It's all changing and shifting, right? So the holiness actually comes from the ways in which we begin to open up and to tell the truth about our changing nature. Right, and learning how to hold space for that and not pushing it away, not running away from it, but just saying, yeah, this is it, you know, and the grace, the openness, the care that springs from that.
Like, the human experience,
the human,
right?
Yeah.
The human. Yeah. I listened to an podcast interview with you, and you talked about the Tina Turner song.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need another hero. Yeah, but this is it. You don't need to be good.
Yeah.
You don't need to be perfect. You don't need to be something I can never be.
Yeah.
Just be you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't need another person to come along to save me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to save myself by remembering what I am, what my nature is, right? You know, instead of just being distracted by another being who I will trick myself into believing I can never be like. And that makes me feel worse about myself. That feeling worse about oneself is just another layer of suffering, right? That we have to cut through, right? So this is why we get to this place of saying, no, like, Jesus was only reflecting back to me my own capacity to be fully human, to fully show up, making decisions in the moments, right, that only point us back to the ultimate truth of who we are, right? And there will always be mistakes, in the same way with the Buddha, right? It's like there's always going to be mistakes, right? But that's okay at the same time. You know, we have to, and part of what I'm doing, you know, in my work right now is just getting rid of this idea of what sacred is and just starting from scratch. What is sacred? What is holy? Yeah. Right? You know, and what is sacred and holy is being my most authentic self. And my most, or anyone's most authentic self is not the harm, it's not the violence, but that's what we think it is. You know, and that's not what we're doing. My most authentic self is an expression of spaciousness, fluidity, openness, truth, love, care, kindness, gentleness. And we have to start believing in our capacity to embody that, because that's ultimately what we are. And I think that is reflected in most of the world's major religions and spiritual paths, right?
So maybe this is, maybe I'm running you over with this request, but what something that popped into my mind is this. If someone is listening and says, man, I have a longing for that. I would love to touch that remembrance. I would love to remember who I am. Is there a practice? Is there something, maybe something you could share really quickly, which is like something like, okay, on the spot, one step, first step, like small little, like one little thing where someone would say, Lamarad, like what do I do? Where do I start? Is there something you could share?
Yeah, well, I think a really great place to start is connecting to unconditional love. Right. And I have many practices around love, but like for people who just want to start, I would just invite you just to sit and to reflect on all the beings who love you, who want you to be free and safe and well, you know, who aren't asking you to be different, to change in this moment. Right. But just to allow yourself to be loved and cared for, you know, just in your imagination. Right. Yeah. We're just imagining.
And that's in your imagination, yeah. Because thanks for saying that, because I think there are a lot of people who think that they have no one who is really wishing them well and the best. There are a lot of people who say, hey, I don't have a family who wishes me well, or I don't have friends who wish me well. I feel lonely. So maybe you can say something about this imagination that there are beings who wish you well.
Yeah, you know, and it's, for me, it's not imaginary. Like, I feel that I'm surrounded by unseen beings who want me to be well, who are protecting me, who love me. Right. But, you know, I have definitely been in times in my life where I didn't believe that. And so when I do a practice like this, you know, and I talk about this, you know, I sometimes call this practice benefactor practice, or in my last book, Love and Rage, I call it the seven homecomings practice. But it's essentially me opening my mind and inviting all these unseen beings to come and be really present with me, around me, and just to like express this or radiate the energy of care around me. And it's just sitting and opening to that and really practicing what it feels like to tune to that, right? And just doing it for as long as I can, as much as I can, you know, as a regular practice that I do every day. But you can just do it anytime that you want, you know, as you're walking down the street and if you're at work or whatever it may be. Just sitting and saying, God, there are beings around me who love me. And I just want to take some space to just feel that, to feel my caring ancestors, to feel the earth love me, to feel, you know, maybe my spiritual lineage, the beings in my spiritual lineage just show up and love me, to feel the communities that I'm a part of love me. Just, I mean, literally just sitting and just like opening to what that care and love could feel like. And the more we do that, the more we attune to what unconditional love and care feel like, right? And that's the healing that many of us have to undergo, because many of us have been raised with, and in a way feel sustained by, conditional love. And conditional love will never invite us to be open and spacious and safe, right? Because for me, love means space. It means safety. It means freedom, right? It means happiness, you know? And when I get that from someone, you know, unconditional love from another being, even from our pets, like, it's a big part of this, yeah, right?
Of course.
You know?
Sure, for a lot of people, it's a big part of their practice.
Yeah.
Pets. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Unconditional love from our pets, right? Like, to feel a being who just wants us to be ourselves. Yeah. You know, of course, probably the first obstacle we're run up against is like not knowing exactly who we are. And but we'll get the space in this practice to start diving into what we are and who we are. And then you start having this experience of authenticity, like, oh, this is who I am. Because a lot of us, again, don't know who we are because we've never felt safe enough
to experience. To show that, and then we unlearn to experience
that,
right?
Yeah. And again, the violence is not who we are. I think sometimes we get stuck there conceptually, you know, no, violence is just a misunderstanding, right? Like, you know, but you have to go beneath the violence, right? And you can use the energy of care and love from benefactors to do that, you know? And that's love. Love is the root of all transformation, right? You know, and this is what we're trying to reacclimate to, or maybe acclimate for the first time for some of us, like actually experiencing authentic, unconditional love, right? And if you just do that, you don't have to do anything else. If you can just do this one practice, it will transform you, you know, just like committing to it, doing it, and moving through really the suffering, the heartbreak. Because when you start actually trying to figure out what unconditional love is, it's going to start pushing up against the trauma and the pain from being loved conditionally.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to discover all the places, all the moments, all the situations where there was no unconditional love, which are a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you push through, like, everything that I do for myself in terms of like expanding into my own authenticity is rooted in the ways that I can feel unconditional care and love and support. Not just from the benefactors in this practice, but from people, you know, in the world. Because I realized when I started doing practices like this, there were people who were actually trying to love me unconditionally, but I didn't get it. Because it felt so different than the conditional love that felt so much stronger. You know, but just random people are trying to love me. People, random people at the grocery store who are letting me like cut in front of them in the line, or, you know, people who are, they may bump into me on the bus or the subway and they just turn around and say, oh, I'm so sorry. That's like love. And I trained myself to connect to those really small experiences, so small interactions, right?
And that's people in the world who genuinely, when they see us, who genuinely just wish as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Smile at you.
Yeah, they smile. And like, I even notice that too, when people smile at me. I'm like, oh my God, what are they doing? You know? What are they smiling? What do they want?
Like, trying to sell me something?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you live in a big city, right? And it's like, it's hard for us to trust people because we feel like people are just trying to manipulate us to get something that they want. So you're dealing with that as well. But like, again, what about the times when people don't want anything from us? Can we start paying attention to that? You know, very small gestures, you know? I mean, and it will transform you, right? It really will, because it will help you to feel less isolated. And it will help you to understand that there are a lot of people who want the same thing. They want to connect to the ways that they're being cared for and loved by people randomly, you know, strangers, right? We all kind of want that on some level. I mean, of course, people are trying to get that love in ways that are can be harmful and violent, right? Absolutely. You know, but I want to stay hopeful and continue to believe in people's deep desire to experience unconditional love, right? Like, I have to believe in that, and that's what motivates my practice, you know? So I try to be in the world as a source of unconditional love, but it doesn't mean that, like, I don't have boundaries, or it doesn't mean that, like, I don't try to protect myself. Oh, that's the case, right? But it means that, like, I also still believe that people want to experience love, right? And I can still be myself and as open as I can be, you know, and not let the fear kind of shut me down, you know, as well.
Well, thank you for sharing the practice.
Yeah.
It's so important to have just something where you can, that you can practice, that you can do, because the concepts are nice, you know, but then it's like, okay, I want to experience this. How do I, right? How do I do that? How do I train it? How do I have a method to, even if I run up against obstacles, okay, I'll just do that again. I'll do the same practice or whatever. So thank you very much. There was another practice that you shared in a podcast of our Dharma sister, Tasha.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. The mind bod, yep. Explorer pod. And there was a practice that you shared, which if I had the right reception of it, was around experiencing a distinction or between feeling unsafe and feeling uncertain, or maybe
or just uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, right? Yeah. Which, once again, here I come with the German, right? But
yeah,
but it struck me because I thought it was such a powerful distinction, and at the same time, comfortable, no, but safe, certain, and sure are the same word in German. It's only one word.
Okay.
That can mean safe and certain and sure.
Yeah.
And in English, there's a little distinction, right? I can be certain and not safe, you know, like this. So I think it's really interesting also for people who think in the German context to unravel that, am I really unsafe in this situation, like by definition, or am I uncomfortable, or is there something that is not clear? I think you formulated that. If you could share just the thought behind that practice, that would be beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I just began to notice that people didn't know how to relate to discomfort. Mm-hmm. Right, and started confusing discomfort with not being safe,
yeah.
And how they would make choices that actually created harm for themselves, yeah. And for others, right? Because discomfort, of course, is uncomfortable. It's not clarity, yeah. It's ambiguity, right? The sense of ego, the sense of self is trying to figure out, you know, what the boundaries and borders are. And when those boundaries get really like blurry, then we enter into this really deep discomfort. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, okay, I have to protect myself. like who's attacking? Like what's going on, right? You know, and for me, from my personal practice, I had to really get deep into this, you know, because there is always discomfort for me. Moving through the world as a Black person, you know, particularly as a Black person, right? Like, I just feel anti-Blackness so much. So, like, yeah, that's always an experience. But am I unsafe, mm-hmm. right? Is there harm coming my way? Am I being threatened? Mm-hmm. Or am I just sensing into the ways in which people and situations are projecting onto me, mm-hmm. which is completely different. Mm-hmm. For me, right? So I had
to, powerful distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but the root practice here is like learning how to hold space for all of this. It's not reacting, but saying, okay, what is this and what does it feel like? Right. And that has given me the space to pay attention to what's happening around me and to say, am I in danger? Or am I just tuning into deep discomfort that I'm sensing, right? Sometimes I am in danger, right? And that gives me the space to make choices to get out of danger, right?
And it's also a choice or to say, sometimes I want to get myself out of discomfort.
Yeah, exactly, right.
I don't have to engage with discomfort yeah. all the time. Yeah. I mean, there's this discomfort I'm creating for myself yeah. in myself because yeah. of the narrative.
Yeah.
But then there is discomfort, as you explained, mm-hmm. Because people are projecting yeah. things on you. Yeah. Or yeah, and then to yeah. say, hey, I don't always have to engage with that. Sometimes yeah. I decide yeah. to get myself out of that situation. Yeah.
But that goes back to the previous practice of opening to care mm-hmm. and love. Like, my discomfort is mediated because I can connect to love mm-hmm. that's always around me. That's what sustains me. And that's what helps me walk down the sidewalk, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if I feel those projections, I return back to the love. The love is what is sustaining me in those moments. Like, because depletion is also another word. Like when we, and depletion in this case, meaning like this lack of self-value, this lack of self-worth mm-hmm. is depleted. And so when I feel depleted, it's easier for me to begin to self-identify with what's being projected onto me. I don't belong here. Yeah. They're looking at me and saying, I don't belong in this yeah. neighborhood. I don't belong in this area. And they're right. Like, I don't deserve to be in the world. Like, it just, yeah. you know, it just spirals into like this whole self-depreciating thing. When I see that happen, when I feel that happening, I connect instantly to the love around me, right? Which is real for me. Like, mm-hmm. In my belief system, I am surrounded by beings who love me, who are protecting me. And they remind me to start paying attention to the love, which is saying, I do deserve to be here. That like what people are projecting onto me is just their deep insecurities about themselves and how they externalize that insecurity onto my body. And I don't have to accept it,
mm-hmm.
yeah. right? I can actually remember my inherent worthiness, yeah. right? And this is why love is so incredibly important always. You know, to always be connected to that, rooted in love. Like, that is what helps me move through the world in this body, right? And that's what helps me to experience restoration, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the love. Like, there are beings who want me to be here. There are beings who want me to be safe and well and happy. And the more I tune into that, the more that I can actually radiate that back out to people who are trying to radiate, you know, their insecurities onto me. So like, you may give, you know, I may feel that, I can, you know, feel that from someone. And then I just refuse to return that same kind of insecurity back. I will still just radiate this care back to them. I still want people to be safe and well and happy, even if they can't wish that for me in the moment, right? Again, like that's the choice that we're trying to make. Like I choose to return as much as possible. Again, I don't always get there. You know? Like, but I am trying to choose each second to return care back to people, even to people who, you know, maybe don't deserve that care back, right? But that's even a like not accurate because everyone deserves care. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, because I know how I show up in the world. I'm a big Black man. Right. And like I've done all this work to understand that like it's even not about sometimes anti-Blackness. It's about the violence of patriarchy, right? The ways in which, you know, men have created violence and expressed violence against other people, including women and femmes and so forth, right? And so I know that like it's easy for me to show up and to play into these narratives of trauma and survival and violence. So recognizing that it's not about me, but it's about what I symbolize in this body, even that's really helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not me. Like, this person has history and a narrative that they've survived, and I may remind them of that. And even in that case, I ask myself, what's the best way to care for someone? Mm-hmm. You know, like, even if it's just like a really practical thing, it's like, yeah, if I'm in a space with someone, like if I'm walking down the street late at night, you know, yeah. which happens, right? And I see someone who presents as female, mm-hmm. you know, I will cross the street.
Yeah. Oh, we talked about yeah. that
I've
before.
I've learned
yeah.
to do yeah. that. I was not always aware
yeah.
of it causes me a bit of heartbreak mm-hmm. that this is necessary.
Right.
It also causes me heartbreak because I know that I have been part of why this is necessary, right? As a man. And now it causes me heartbreak that, well, to recognize that it would be maybe a good idea to, you know? And sometimes I see I'm walking down the street and it's like I might see just a person. Even if I just see a person and it might be something interesting in the way they dress or whatever, it's very easy to sense a slight moment, a certain discomfort. I always make it a point to turn away, look the other way, just to signal, hey, I don't want anything from you. I don't want to threaten you. I don't want to, hey, what's going on? Like, I don't want to impose in your space. I don't want to do none of that. Even though I would love to exchange a smile, but that might not be the skillful thing to do in that moment. The skillful thing might be to signal, I'm out of your way. I mean, you know, it's heartbreaking that that's necessary.
Yeah.
But we had this conversation at home mm. because our son said, he asked us, he says, you know, sometimes, or he says, hey, I do exactly that because I don't want to feel someone threatened by me. So mm-hmm. he said, when I'm at night, same thing you said, and going down the street and I see yeah. someone identifying as female, mm-hmm. I change the side
yeah.
because I don't want the person to feel yeah. threatened.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So to, yeah. and to talk about heartbreak,
yeah.
you know, that, it's not like
it's not I'm falling on the floor and I have a heart attack, but exactly. it's just a slight feeling of,
well, it's empathy.
It's yeah, but it's yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're just like trying to reflect on what someone may be experiencing around you. Mm-hmm. But I'm not taking responsibility for it.
True.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great distinction.
Yeah, like it's just yeah, this is these are the structures that are in place.
And,
you know?
And talking about patriarchy,
yeah.
it's like now as a mother, because yeah. my son said that, it's not like it's that didn't start with him, yeah. but it's part of a system. Mm-hmm. And he having empathy mm-hmm. with another person because of the system, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. You know, and maybe even when people see us do that, that actually begins to disrupt the narrative,
mm.
you know, around the lack of empathy as well. And I think I've been doing this in many ways, you know, for many years now, not just with women or femmes or gender nonconforming people, but like even around race, you know, just like I have intentionally like really been a very positive example for like young white boys, you know, especially where I grew up, in the South in America, right? You know, I've intentionally been a really positive, joyful kind of example of a black person for like young white kids because I want them to have that memory. Because I, you know, particularly in certain situations where I know that certain kids are getting a different narrative at home.
Where does that again cross over into sort of feeling this is my responsibility now, you know, to present this or to, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's my responsibility to express who I really am, and that's who I really am. Well, but I just turned it on, you know, I just turned it up. You know, I'm not making anything up, I'm just emphasizing, right? Because there's a lot we influence through behavior, right? And I want, especially young kids who are really impressionable, you know, I think this is what a lot of parents are doing. They want their kids to have favorable impressions of people. So we, you know, we want to make that happen, you know? So yeah, like I'm just myself, right? You know, and then that gets kind of like, that becomes a memory. So that when they get other kinds of indoctrinations from families, right? Or whomever who is in their life, they can always have that memory and say, oh, but like this person was different, right? You know, but yeah, I don't feel responsible, but I am aware of the power of representation and how I show up, right? So even going back to the example of just like walking, you know, just moving through the world, I'm a big man, I can feel really imposing, but also there's a way that like I intentionally soften as well, because I can't, you know, do much about, you know, being tall and big and everything, but I can like soften how I move with the world. I can soften my facial expressions, right? I can smile, you know, I can, and I also walk very slowly through the world. I mean, I just like, there's something just about ease and moving through the world that I think can communicate to folks that you're not a threat, you know? But again, I'm not, it sounds like I'm doing that on purpose, but I'm just doing it because that's how I, who I am. Yeah. That's how I move through the world, right?
In terms of ease, feeling relaxed.
Yeah.
And we had the question before we started to record the podcast, being relaxed, feeling relaxation and feeling safe.
Yeah.
Because it goes together, right? Yeah. When you are at ease, when you are relaxed, you feel safe and you provide safety for others.
Yeah, you know, it's, so you like just being in the world, being in a city, for instance, right? Yeah, there's so much happening and I can practice awareness of what's happening in the space around me, right? I'm not just gonna cross the street without looking both ways, but if the cars aren't coming, if there's like, you know, cars have stopped and I have the walk sign, then there's a relaxation like that I can kind of open up to, but also an alertness, right? So there's a balance here to remain alert, but also to be relaxed in that alertness, right? Which is of course really hard if, you know, if there's trauma and paranoia from that trauma. Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, that's one thing for sure. But we have to train a little more in holding alertness and fluidity and openness together, you know, and we, you know, it's like meditating as well. Yeah. It's like when I tell people about, okay, the posture for meditating, like it's not so much about sitting upright and sitting really rigid. There's a looseness that has to happen, you know? There's a balance that arises, you know? It's like the difference between a plastic container and a glass container, you know? A plastic container can expand. There's some flexibility, malleability there, right? But if you're in this glass container, there's only so much, you know, that can be held until it cracks, you know, until it shatters. A lot of us are just glass containers walking around, always on the verge of shattering. You know, that's how rigid we get, you know? But like, how do we expand or open to our, like, our flexibility, you know, where we're, yes, we're contained, but also have the capacity to adjust, to expand, right, at the same time. And that's how we should be practicing in the world. Right, not to completely let down our guards, not to completely let down, you know, the energy of containment, but also to have some flexibility, fluidity in that containment.
And when you say the way we should be practicing, you have an online practice group. I saw the Free Radicals.
Free Radicals.
Which is also the time zones for for Germans and Europeans to practice. Can you say a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Free Radicals is a monthly gathering that we do on the first Thursday of each month for the evening time, you know, for Europe, right? Afternoon for American times and everything in between. But for me, Free Radicals is this space where we're practicing mindfulness, but a really engaged kind of mindfulness, right? You know, where we're talking about the body, we're talking about trauma, and we're putting it into conversation with mindfulness itself, right? And we call it Free Radicals because it's inspired by the people who inspire us. So we talk about, okay, who inspired you, you know, to do the work of liberation and freedom and care and love? And we talk about those people. And then we do a short practice that helps us to tune into that quality of the person that inspired us. So maybe I'll share the life of someone, a radical, a free radical, or someone will volunteer in the group to share their life. And then we create a practice that helps us to connect to those qualities of those free radicals, right? And everything's very spontaneous too. And that's how I practice and teach. Like I just kind of show up.
For the absolute freaks among us, would you say it's sort of a adaption of deity practice in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just a very straightforward, accessible way. You know, like there's someone who inspired me, let's connect to why they inspired me and how can I take on those qualities through mindfulness, essentially. Yeah.
And everyone is able to join, just internet-wise?
Yeah, and it's all online, right, and free. You know, you just kind of sign up, you get the link, and you get, you know, invite email every month, right? And it gets up to about 200 people month from all around the world, you know. But we especially created it for European time zones because so many folks here in different countries were just asking, you know, for me to do something in a time that wasn't midnight, you know, here.
So we got to put the link in the show notes.
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah.
And the link to the book.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Dear Lamorat, thank you very much for your time and very much for sharing your space, which you talk about, which is... feelable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that.
Thank you so
absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah. So now we will turn water into wine.
That's right. That's right.
Meaning going to dinner.